Welcome to the Non-Op series for the Minerals and Royalties podcast, where EMPs and drilling capital meet the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with David Martineau, President and CEO of NRES Resources, who provides debt and equity capital for production-heavy working interest projects that are sub-$100 million in size. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what David had to say.
All right, David, good morning and welcome onto the podcast. Looking forward to diving in, seeing what, learning a little bit more about what you and NRES are up to, specifically for this podcast and this audience around the non-op space. So thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet. Always like to start with a little context. You're a technical guy by background and have transitioned into the finance space. So where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? How'd you get into oil and gas? I'll hand it over to you.
Sure. So I'm a second generation oil guy. My father was an independent geologist in Dallas, drilled quite a few wells in the Fort Worth Basin. And then when the Barnett Shale came blowing through, was kind of on the front lines of that. So I kind of, and he, as a geologist, I spent a handful of time on rigs looking at things. Woke up on Sunday morning and saw a bunch of logs laid out on the dining room table at times and asked a few questions. Worked as a summer intern, summer job out in the field a few times. So just kind of fell in love with the business, knew I had kind of the engineering component that just in my education, the science and the maths that I liked. So I went into engineering, got my geological engineering degree from Ole Miss, worked a couple years for an engineering firm in Dallas, then ultimately went back to graduate school and got my master's in geology at the University of Texas in Austin. And from there, I started working right out of graduate school. I worked for Oryx Energy, which later, about a year later, merged with Kerr-McGee. And Oryx was gone and Kerr-McGee was group. I was a production engineer. I spent some time in the environmental health and safety group. I spent some time in the A&D group. At one point, I sat on the worldwide emergency response team for Kerr-McGee. And the whole time being a production engineer, so that's where my roots are. In 2003, I left Kerr-McGee and started Martineau Petroleum, basically going out into East Texas, finding opportunities to operate, you know, kind of use my technical expertise. We had some success in buying a few things. 2007, we ended up going into Bryan College Station. There was a company there that was going into bankruptcy, and we stopped it at the door of bankruptcy, and we ended up working that company and all their assets for a handful of years. Shortly thereafter, with the assets that were kind of legacy in that company, we started two drilling programs that were backed by Macquarie Bank in the Giddings Field. We ultimately sold those, and in 2014, a couple of my friends that were private equity guys, generalist fund private equity guys, they asked me if I could help them triage acquisitions. They felt like the industry was in a dislocated position, and there was some
opportunity. Now, this is pre or post Thanksgiving Day surprise when oil dropped off a cliff that these generalists approach you?
After.
Got it. Okay.
After. And so we ended up doing a couple projects. Each private equity shop did two projects. I still sit on the board of one of those, but it kind of got me to understand how the financial side of things worked. I do have a strong technical background. And so I get the oil business side, but I've seen a lot of projects in my life that are really good projects, but died or were killed because of a poor financial structure. And so, you know, I kind of felt like, hey, I could help my friends in their equity shops get some good deals. So we did that. I learned quite a bit. And then in 2017, I started NRES Resources, went out and found a commitment from a group of Israeli investors to start doing a debt structure, VPP structure program. We also, at the same time, a legacy company of mine and a partner of mine, we used a group of our old investors, high net worth individual family offices, and started expanding that as well. And so we basically now, as NRES, as a financing group, we have two buckets of equity or capital to deploy. We have the Israeli money, which is $120 million commitment, and then $120 million soft commitment behind that. And then we have our group of about 100 family offices that have a net worth of about $17 billion. And so when we need an equity slug, we go get that equity slug.
Do you know where you're going to be on October 10th later this year? If your answer is not the Minerals and Royalties Assembly and Awards Dinner, then drop everything you're doing right now and go online to get registered. If you're serious about deal making and networking in the minerals and non-op space, then I expect to see you there.
And so you guys are focused. Talk to me about what the ideal oil and gas project is. Do you have some flexibility? Is it more yield oriented? Do you like specific basins?
I'm pretty agnostic to basin. You know, California is a tough spot. Colorado is becoming a tough spot to own oil and gas assets in. But we've looked at projects in both those states. I'm also agnostic to price, or not to price, to oil or gas. You know, some people can argue that, hey, it's time to get in the gas space. You know, others say, hey, oil's where it's at. So we just really look. If I'm looking for an ideal project, it can be operated. It can be non-op. We've done quite a few non-ops in the last year. And usually a management team or an individual has gotten hold of a project and brought it to us for us to help finance. And then we use our oil and gas expertise and knowledge to help get the deal across the goal line. Usually we use Israeli money and an equity slug. Sometimes it's just an equity slug. Sometimes it's just the Israeli fund as well. And so I do have, because I have that flexibility to kind of move back and forth between the two, usually everything is very PDP heavy. We love our PDP. We love our production. We're yield players. If you bring me a strict drilling deal, I can tell you right now, I'm probably not going to do it because I just, that's risk profile is not what we look. We right size the debt and we bring the equity with it. Again, you know, you've just seen so many projects where the debt, they over leverage themselves and one or two hiccups and things just don't go well. So we target a 50-50 debt equity component. Sometimes it goes 60-40, other times it goes 40-60, but we will not over leverage our assets. We like to have our yield and we're going to right size that debt properly.
And what kind of size transactions are you typically targeting? And it started in 2017, and has that grown to today?
So in 2017, 2018, we really kind of focused on sub $20 million deal size. We have grown that now. We have, as the commitments from Israel and the network of high net worth individual family offices have grown, we have pushed that to sub $100 million. And so we are happy to jump in on any project. We also feel that space is very underutilized capital-wise. Just don't have a lot of capital in the sub $100 million space, particularly in the sub $50 million space. There's just very little capital available to folks that want to transact. And other than just helping people acquire assets, we'll also help them refinance out of projects. If they have a partner they want to buy out or a financial institution that they, you know, is kind of getting long in the tooth, we're happy to dig into those projects as well. And so, you know, we have a stable of engineers and geologists and field folks to really kind of look at the thing. As I tell everyone, Tim, when we look at a project, we look at it with the lens of an oil person. We do not look at it through the lens of a financier, right? I am not a spreadsheet jockey. I am an oil guy. And so I ultimately look at it through the lens of an oil person.
How, you know, if you're looking at yield-oriented investments and, you know, sometimes the debt component is a little higher, are you implementing a hedging strategy? Can you talk about?
Of course. Yes. You know, that's ultimately where you can lock in some returns for the first 2, 3, 4 years. And so what on the Israeli side, when we do the debt structure, usually it's a fully amortizing or a VPP that's a 4 or 5 year VPP. And we will hedge 100% of the volumes in that side of things. On the equity side, we usually target about 50% of whatever the equity piece is of a hedge. We do want to kind of see a little of the upside. We do like to buy puts. So we do get to see the upside. So a lot of times we have to bake that cost into the project, buying those puts. But yes, hedging is very important to us. We have to see that happen. We would not do a project if we could not hedge.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors.
Looking to ramp up deal flow for your minerals and non-op ground game? Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has closed on over 120 deals, totaling $110 million in value, with deal sizes ranging from $50,000 upwards of $5 million. Whether you're looking for white space, permit, duck, PDP, AFE, or wellbore-only deals, the Texas Mineral Company has got you covered. For more information on how to source deal flow from the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information. Farmers National Company has oil and gas experts located across the country ready to provide you unmatched convenience and service for your land management needs. Whether you're looking for turnkey management of oil and gas interests or simply looking for an advisor to help you sell or lease your minerals, Farmers National Company has you covered. Learn more about Farmers National Company's team of certified mineral managers, landmen, attorneys, and accountants by going to fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com. Does your team ever struggle with employee turnover? What about right-sizing your team to fit your company's needs over time? Do you have the right accounting systems and software in place to maintain control and visibility on all your cost centers? If any of these things are challenges in your business, then Opportune back office outsourcing could be the right solution. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com.
Gotcha. So kind of a question, just kind of pulling back for a second and looking at the macro scene, you know, 2017 post, you know, the last collapse in oil, you start to see a lot of traditional lending pulling out of the space for ESG purposes.
Yes.
And then being more selective. So down market, there's less competitive, right, is what you referenced. And just if you want to get an RBL or a line of credit, harder and harder at that time, right? So I imagine that was one of the initial reasons to get in and kind of fill that gap in the market. You know, what have you seen since, you know, I think access to traditional oil and gas lending is harder and harder. Can you comment on that?
100%. You're right. In 2017, 2018, there was just a complete pullback, right, of senior lenders. We've actually seen a handful kind of come back into the sub $50 million space a little bit, but they are very picky. They want to have relationships with the lender and the borrower before they start. Most of them are not taking new projects. You see a handful that are. A lot of these groups are wanting to get into syndicated projects and not wanting to do one deal with one operator. And so that can be a more of a challenge as well. And so, you know, I could probably on one or two hands count all the banks that are truly active in the sub $50 million space. And they're going to have a lot of criteria. They are not going to overleverage themselves. You know, they're looking at 40 and 50% of PV10 to loan on to LTV. So it's just a very conservative approach. They will use a really low conservative price deck as their sensitivity case. And so, you know, you're just seeing challenges in that RBL space, right? And I mean, even projects that we have that might have a little higher cost of capital that we, after we've owned it for a couple of years, we then want to go into traditional RBL, Tim. We're just not seeing groups that want that action. And so, I mean, and that is rolled up to today. So, you know, it just is, you've got to build those relationships with those bankers, right? And, you know, bankers move around a lot. They all kind of do. They have forever. But if you find a good bank that can work with you and likes what you have, you know, hopefully they'll be with you. But that's the one concern that I always have had when we started this program with NRES is that the banks would take you all the way to the altar and then kind of turn left on you a little bit, right? And leave you hanging with potential deposit that's hard. And then the deal doesn't get done. And so that is where the need for the Israeli debt comes in or VPP comes in because, you know, every deal I've brought to them that they say they're going to do, they've done. And so while they're a smidge more expensive than a senior lender, they show up at closing. And surety of close is the name of the game here, right? Because I know a lot of sellers that they'll take the third or fourth bid in the process, knowing that the group that they're going to pick is going to get it across the goal line.
Yeah. And if you're doing any type of workover program or any type of drilling, leveraging the PDP base to get this debt capital, if commodity prices are in a favorable environment, time is not your friend. And so you never know when things will drop off a cliff. And so if the debt is accessible, but a little more expensive, you can still make your returns and investors can do very well. So yeah, I agree with you with that. You know, I put together a few different ventures on the royalty side last year that were more yield oriented. And it was a frustrating process with the conventional lenders. there was this, you know, interest out of the gate, and we'll work with you. We'll customize the approach. It's all about the long-term relationship. And then it was time and time again, sorry, you don't fit the criteria. It was a cookie cutter approach, and they all professed to not do that. But, you know, no disrespect to any of them. I think it's really the criteria to get new oil and gas investments on board or passed by IC are more and more stringent. So they have to have this cookie cutter approach. And so it sounds like you being an OM and can do the one-off projects, which again, not only are we talking about size down market, but you have to tell a story to a bank that there's going to be more deals beyond this for them to invest the time. Right. And you're willing to do one-off deals. And so that's a huge value add that's not really available right now on the debt side.
Well, and that's where we want to be. We want to find our niche and kind of really exploit it. We like how we do things. You know, we kiss a lot of frogs, is like I like to say, right? We look at a lot of projects. You've also seen in the non-op space and in the op space, you've seen the valuations, what you're buying it for. You're buying things in PV20, PV25, PV30 now. And we actually bought a project earlier this year in the Midland Basin at a PV37, right? On PDP, right? So you're seeing, but you need a strategic seller, right? That's the whole thing. There are a lot of groups out there that want to put things out on the market and see if they can catch that flyer. But when you find your true strategic seller, we're getting out of this basin. We don't want to be in non-op anymore. We are trying to move to oil and get out of gas, right? Whatever that reason is, that's where you're seeing in the sub-100, sub-$50 million space, you're seeing transactions happen of groups that want to leave this area or concept, you know, for a strategic reason. And so that ultimately pushes up what the PV is that you're going to get, which ultimately would reduce the price a little bit, which is good for us when you're trying to help finance things.
You know, you're focused on yield-oriented strategies. We talked about this offline with where interest rates are, you know, doing your type of model on royalties becomes a really tight margin. And as a result, working interest is really the only way to make the math work. But talk to me just about 8%, 9%, 10% debt and how that's changed the landscape a little bit from y'all's end.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, once you get up to 8% or 9% or 10% debt, right, the economics, to make the economics of the project work, the sale price has to be a certain thing, right? I mean, it just does. You know, 10-15 years ago, we would buy things on PV10. If you bought it on a PV12 or a PV14, you thought you stole it, right? You thought it was a great deal. Now you're just not seeing those transactions happen. And it's all because, one, lack of capital in the market, and two, the capital that is in the market, it is expensive. And so you're just continuing to kind of evolve into what is the right band of PV when you're buying an asset. You know, if you go and look at all the big publicly traded companies that publicize what they're buying things on, they're buying things on a 2.2 to a 2.5x multiple of cash flow, right? In the old day, you know, 10 years ago, that was 4x, right? And so all these metrics of how you acquire things are because the market is tightening and the cost of the capital is going up. You're just seeing these kind of contraction of what multiples you'll see or the increased PV valuation.
Okay, no, absolutely.
But getting into your mineral space, you're right. You know, because minerals trade at a higher multiple, right? Higher cost makes it really hard to do a viable mineral deal that doesn't just rely on the drill bit, right? I mean, if you're out buying in front of the drill bit, that's one thing. But if you're buying a yield mineral project to put debt on it, it really tightens the straps pretty hard.
Yeah, the other thing too, and I've had multiple conversations with different folks around this, is if you're getting access to capital from traditional lenders, the collateral you have to put up and the cash and the liquid assets you have to tie up in order to get that debt has increased, which has a trickle-down effect to your broader portfolio as well. Now, you look at that as from an oil and gas perspective, or just a family office who has oil and gas as part of their portfolio, and now they're tying up other assets if they're doing a hard loan on, you know, their personal collateral. It just, again, it all shakes out to there's less capital available. It's hard to get access to, right? Which gives folks like yourself an opportunity to, you know, to fulfill a need. Let's talk a little bit about some of the deals you've done. You want to start from early days, 2017, 18, or focus on recent years, but
I'll give a historical overview. I mean, we've bought and sold assets, and I would probably say in the first 15 years of Martinhoe Petroleum and NRES, we probably bought and closed 40 different transactions. Then when I jumped in and helped the equity shops, we did, and most of those transactions, the earlier ones, sub $30 million. and I'd say all of them are sub $30 million. But that was a good opportunity for me. You know, you're starting out, you're trying to buy things, you're just trying to buy them right, and you're operating. And as we got into the private equity help, when I was helping my two funds, we did a pretty large transaction where we bought an operative facility up in Appalachia for $165 million. I ended up sitting on the board of that. The management team that brought it to the equity shop ran it. Ultimately, they just sold that a couple years ago. And so it ended up being a pretty nice lick for us. The other deals, as we've just in the last 4 or 5 years, as we've kind of taken the INRES model and pushed it out into the market, I think we've closed like 12 transactions in the last 4 years. We actually closed one right in the middle of COVID, which was knock on wood. I don't even know how we did it, but we did it.
Talk about that a little bit, because that's interesting for sure.
So, you know, this was a seller that had gotten in trouble, and a trustee had taken over the asset, and the trustee was just hell-bent to get this thing sold. And they hired a marketing group, and the marketing group was getting a lukewarm reception. And so we came in and said, hey, we can finance this, and we have a management group that wants to operate it. And so right there, I mean, and it was it's also an asset that historically has a black eye, which is a CBM, a coal bed methane field. And so we right-sized bid. The trustee was ready to go. And so, you know, my team and I financed it, and the operating group did it. We've subsequently sold that asset and did pretty well. But you know, so it just, as I talk about that strategic seller, that trustee of that asset, it didn't matter if it was, and it was smack dab in the middle of COVID. It didn't matter if we were wearing masks or not. He was going to sell that asset, right? Mm-hmm. Period. And so we were just right there and could fight through the minutia. That's another thing that I kind of pride myself on, is I'm willing to go into the difficult deal, the deal that has the hair, and I'm willing to get creative to get through it. Financial side, and in the old days, operated side. So I'm not afraid of a complex, hairy transaction. And that one was, when we're dealing with the trustee. I mean, you got a trustee that's in Virginia, and he's trying to tell you how to run an oil field. That tells you something right there. And so just over the last few years, we've bought a handful of non-op positions. Management teams have come to us. We work with them as they manage the assets going forward. The last deal we did was this summer in the Anadarko Basin. We bought a $40 million transaction. And help finance that. The young guy that brought it to us needed some help with the back office, so we're providing that for him. But it's a good deal for us, and it's a great deal for him. And so, you know, we bought some operated properties out in the Midland Basin and Permian, some Central Basin platform. But that was the management team that said, we want to be the operator. And so we said, okay, we'll be the financier. You're the operator. And so we did two of those. Each one of those was $17 million. One was $23 million. So, you know, we're active in the space.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Your property is your legacy, so you should only leave it in the hands of a land management company who has a legacy of its own. If you own oil and gas interests or act as a fiduciary for those who do, you can find a long-term partner at Farmers National Company, who since 1929 has taken great pride in helping clients maximize the benefits of property ownership by providing turnkey management services and by working alongside them through generational transfers of specialized assets such as oil and gas interests and farmland. To learn more, visit fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com.
Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has been a leading ground game broker for minerals and non-op deals, closing over 120 transactions across the Permian, SCOOP/STACK, Haynesville, Bakken, Powder River Basin, DJ, and Eagleford, with deal sizes ranging from $50,000 upwards of $5 million and 1.5 NRAs upwards of 3,500 NRAs. The Texas Mineral Company can be flexible on where and how they can source your deal flow. For more information on how your team can work with the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Scaling up your portfolio while minimizing G&A is the name of the game in the minerals and non-op space. Whether you're a brand new fund, an established team who's growing quickly, or a fully developed portfolio in harvest mode, Opportune's back office outsourcing team can help. Stop worrying about all the headaches that come along with day-to-day accounting and back office operations, and contact Opportune today. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information.
When you're pooling the equity capital, are you then managing the assets? You mentioned the back office board. And when we talked offline, you also mentioned you've done $50 million worth of divestitures the last couple of years. So how are you guys really set up? Because you're a bit of a hybrid, right? You're kind of holding assets, you're putting deals together, you're providing debt financing. So one-stop shop in many regards. But yeah, talk to me about that. And you guys kind of principally investing, you know, with the equity investors, or are you just putting it together and handing it off to them?
Oh, no. When the equity investors, we put 10 to 15% of our own money of the equity buy-in. We will not and will never just raise capital for a project. We will always be an investor. And so that, you know, just kind of checking that box, I don't feel comfortable. I mean, every time someone's brought me a deal and I said, how much are you putting in the deal? Right. And they say nothing. I say, well, I'm going to put exactly what you put in. Right. And nothing. So, and our investors, our longtime friends and family investors, they want to see us. They know that we are invested. But as what's really important for me, and this is just 20 years of kind of experience of buying and selling assets, I really, when we buy something, I ultimately set it up to be sold, right? I have my land position firmed up. I have the engineering firmed up. I have the accounting firmed up. And so when timing is right in the industry and we think it's time to go, we're kind of ready to go. And so because the last thing you want to do is say, hey, the environment is right to sell. Now let me go get my engineering. Let me make sure my land is cleaned up. And so we set up all of our companies, even though we do the economics like we're going to hold it forever, right? I mean, that's how you have to run it, that you're going to hold it for a long term. But then you ultimately find that window, Tim, where you're going to sell and you're going to see the premiums and the returns that you want to see. And so we set up all of our companies. And you're right, I am a hybrid. I try to help my young guys because I do back a lot of guys that are kind of young and aggressive and want to go out. But haven't seen all the warts and haven't experienced all the gotchas out there. And so I try to help kind of guide them through some of that. Because we have the back office, we have the engineers, we can help these guys with that a little bit. Now, some guys don't want it. They want to do it themselves, and that's perfectly fine. And if they can and they have all those capabilities, that's great. Other ones just a guy with a deal and needs a company to help them. And so we're kind of willing to help them do that as well.
What kind of trends are you seeing on the non-op side? You talked to this briefly before, but let's use the $40 million deal with Diversified that was announced on the 28th of June. This year, you know, that the way Diversified framed it in their press release was non-core assets that,
sure,
if everyone remembers, Diversified's gone on a roll-up spree the last 2-3 years. First it was in Appalachia, then it was Barnett, Anadarko, Haynesville. So along the way, you accumulate stuff that is non-core to the business and, you know, can be consolidated by groups who are looking for that, like yourselves. But is it, you know, there's a bunch of roll-up happening in the Permian right now. You know, this happens in the daisy chain of M&A.
Right.
You get all this consolidation and then folks get big and slow. And then there's, you know, the non-core stuff that becomes the starter asset for new groups and away, right, and away we go. New technology, right, come in. They increase the value of the asset through optimization and then you sometimes sell it back to the same groups. But where are you seeing the most in the nano space, the types of deal flow? What do they look like? What are the different buckets?
You know, really all traditional legacy type assets. I mean, there are some deals out there in the marketplace where you want to be in the Haynesville or the Midland Basin or the Bakken or the Eagle Ford, and they're looking for a non-op partner, which basically just means they're looking for a financing partner, right? And the deals that we're looking at that we like is really, in Diversified's case, the asset that we ultimately got from Diversified came to them in a large Conoco purchase a year before, and which had a gigantic operated position and then had this non-op position. And so again, non-core to Diversified, and it was time for them to divest that. And so, but for us, the deals that we like, you know, historically are legacy long-term assets that are kind kind of, if they're in the shales or in the unconventional space, we like to see them off their curve a little bit and kind of down where we know where we can really kind of project their production going forward in the reserve report. But you're just, to get into the trends, you as you mentioned, you're right. As consolidation happens, there is kind of a pushing out of non-core assets, and that will continue to happen in the non-op space. Again, I kind of see it as two buckets. As a group that looks like it's a financing to help a drilling program continue to push forward, and then also these non-core assets or strategic sellers that say we need to push these out. Those are kind of the two trends I see right now in the non-op space.
As the non-op space starts to grow and become more efficient, you know, I look at the non-op space being very similar to the mineral space circa 2015-16. You know, the empire market's starting to form. There's some publics now. Private equity is starting to back teams. And so you're starting to create this ecosystem. But we're still somewhat in the earlier stages. But you fast forward in minerals 6-7 years, and there's just a lot of different players with different niche strategies. So I think non-op's going that direction. Right now, there's a lot of AFE funds, right? I think capital discipline with a lot of the operators has, you know, forced them to really lower or completely remove their CapEx budgets for non-op. And then that creates the Wellbore Wednesday phenomenon, you know, selling, you know, creating partnerships with folks. Now, the funds that are being established to buy the AFEs are going to eventually become cash flow machines.
Right.
Do you foresee you guys being an exit for these types of players? Right. And then it becomes that long tail production. They're saying, okay, we'd rather monetize this, put it back into what we did before and recycle that cash flow. But this is what you're looking for. And so there's a meeting of the minds there.
So we've seen a couple of those already on the market in the last 6 or 8 months that are groups that did take some non-op positions and took over some AFEs. For me, as personally, when those come out and they're wellbore only projects, and there's zero upside, you know, you're just basically running out the PDP. It's a little harder for me to get my head around because I do look at it as only downside, right? I mean, if you're buying 30 wells that have been drilled the last 4 or 5 years, and if one of those wells goes off and your operator decides not to go fix it, there's nothing you can do, right? And so there's no kind of bailout in the portfolio to help you build value if you have some problems in a wellbore only type situation. So that's where the groups that are buying the AFEs, you know, that's what they're doing. They're just jumping in and, hey, I've got 5 AFEs on this pad, but that's all you're getting is just those 5 wells. And so when it's ultimately time to sell that, you see that wellbore only come out. And in the marketplace, in the non-op space, you've seen, like I said, a handful of projects that are wellbore only. I tend to shy away from them. I've bid on a few, and luckily I haven't gotten them. But, you know, I just kind of bake that into when I'm talking to these young management teams about how they want to bid on things. I want to tell them about the risk of a wellbore only component, right, and how I look at things. But I do believe there is going to be more of those because there have been a lot of AFEs that have been swapped around in the last 24 to 36 months. And those groups are going to make their money, you know, off that kind of flush production or that initial production rate. And then they're going to say, hey, we want to push it out, and out we go, right? And let's get our returns and close the chapter on this one. So I do see that coming out probably the next 2 or 3, 4 more years. You're going to see quite a few more of those deals come on the market.
Yeah, I saw a wellbore only override this year. It was from a non-op player that decided to sell the override instead of sell the non-op and keep the override. And, you know, it was interesting. Just a lot of funds aren't set up for that. You know, the traditional yield minerals buyers that I would approach for a PDP heavy deal, you know, even though they're looking for lots of production and lots of wellbores, the serendipity factor is still very much important in the underwriting. So when you remove that, and it really is just a commodity bet, it changes, you know, how to view things. And so if you're, you know, like Ryza out there is doing the asset-backed securitization, they're buying wellbores. It's a structuring play. And so you're an all-man geologist, engineer by background. You want to see that upside and know that if I'm going to hold this for the long term, who knows what's down the road, but you know, you want to participate in that, right? right? So exactly. I understand where you come from.
You know, that ABS structure, that asset-backed securitization, I believe we're going to see more of those kind of coming out. You know, you have to see a certain size of that project to do the deal, because the groups that are putting those together, it's such a process, right? You really need to have at least $100 million minimum floor to even kind of open the door up to that type of financing. But it's out there. It's out there. And I think it'll continue to grow. It's growing some, but it'll keep going.
Yeah, for sure. It's a combination with the scale. It's a combination of justifying the drag, all the legal fees and, you know, advisory fees that go into putting an ABS together. Then there's getting an investment grade, having enough diversification. And then when you're, you know, it's typically insurance companies, when insurance companies are buying into these ABS tranches, are they willing to do kind of solo where they're the only investor and do something smaller? And I think kind of goes into what you're doing, where the traditional banks aren't willing to do one-off deals and projects or go down market, and you are willing to. I think that kind of solution presents itself in the future in ABS as it becomes more efficient, right, and more cookie cutter. And capitalism's great, because when there's a way to make money, people find the solution. And
they try for sure.
Exactly. Well, very good. Well, really appreciate you coming on, David. I'll give the floor to you to close it out. I guess we have a great audience here, you know, folks out there. What's the best way if they have projects? We've kind of talked about what you're looking for throughout the episode, but just to wrap it all up and summarize it.
Right. For sure, Tim. Thank you. Thank you again for having me today. And I really enjoyed this back and forth and great communication here. You know, overall, NRES wants to do projects in the sub $100 million space. Kind of, here's my elevator speech. We're fortunate enough to have two buckets of capital to go into, and we can get creative, and we can bring some oil and gas lens to it. And we can bring, if you have a project that you are having trouble getting financed or even want to help, we're happy to help you go through the bid process and tell you where we are. You know, please give me a call.
Anyone interested in connecting with David, happy to connect you offline by email and let you take it from there. But, you know, I get calls all the time, specifically from people from my previous network, because I don't really deal with upstream operations anymore, but I have a lot of relationships from over the years. There's so many folks that are just stuck with, they have these great ideas around conventional projects. They worked the field 20 years ago. They know the technology is applied to it. The economics make sense, and they just can't find the capital. And so for those of you who are like that are out there, please reach out.
Yeah, please give me a call. We'd like to look, and we'd like to help if it can be done.
Awesome. All right, David. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Talk to you soon. Have a great day.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties podcast is meant for informational purposes only. Tim Powell and the Minerals and Royalties Authority are not promoting any specific securities or investments, nor are they providing any type of investment advice. If you enjoyed the episode, then I encourage you to tune in more and also check out the Minerals and Royalties Authority YouTube channel. Thanks, and see you next time.